overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Many blessings to you.
So with the sound of the bell, the invitation is to let our attention descend from our heads into our hearts and to consciously breathe and observe the spacious awareness in which we find ourselves, an open-hearted awareness that is always there, an awareness that is free of concept, conclusion, thought, judgment, idea, a spacious awareness that just rests within the heart. And we are placing our attention there and allowing our doing to emerge from this beingness, this ground of being. As we rest in this spacious awareness, we allow the truth to unhide itself, a truth that sets us free from our opinions, from our judgments, from our worries and concerns, a truth that is always there. We see the truth in the stars, how they don't think, and yet they abide in their ancient, luminous reality. We see the truth revealed in nature, not concerned with yesterday or tomorrow, but fully present in the holy instant of now. The longer we can sustain this conscious breath, this expansive realization that we are not our thoughts, the more we are able to touch our inherent freedom. The Bible says, "The truth shall set you free." And the truth is always there. But it is contingent upon us to breathe into the truth and to breathe out from the truth. The truth, its spirit, was never born and spirit never dies. So the truth would say we are spiritual beings and we're having a human experience. And so we can smile at that human experience, knowing that there are going to be challenges. Being human is a difficult responsibility for so many, because we've been programmed and conditioned by our culture, a culture that has preferences, that has judgments, that has requirements. And when we let go of the societal and the worldly idea of who we are, then who are we? Again, the breath would say we are spiritual beings. We are the light. We are love itself. We are a deep abiding peace. And the bell brings us to that, if we will just allow. The more we can sustain this spacious awareness of our beingness, the freer we become. Thoughts will arise within our mind, and they're truly auditioning for our attention. Think about me. And yet we are resting in the heart of oneness, and we smile at that thought pattern, because soon enough we will be consumed with it. But for now, we're choosing to practice the presence of being still, of conscious breathing, realizing that we are this mindful awareness which precedes all thought. And in that spacious awareness, we are free. If a thought pattern should come and seduce you with its juiciness, with a simple exhalation, you can unhook from that thought. Maybe there's a thought about the family. Boy, can that trigger a lot of conversation. And with one deep inhalation and an exhale, we can unhook from those thought patterns. It's very simple, and yet it's not necessarily easy to do. But the more we practice, the better we become. I hear that chant that says, "Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know." And in that stillness, we feel a connection to all life, that we're not separate, that in fact, we are woven in a tapestry of light and love, the one life, God's life, everywhere revealing itself, and we are that. And so there is no me separate from you, but rather there is this divine we, that we are all children of the Most High, whether we are a bunny rabbit, whether we are the President of the United States, whether we are the homeless person on the street corner asking for help. We are all of this. And we smile. A beloved friend reminded me that when the mind starts to get active and wants to run away with a stinky thought, you just give the mind a hug and it stops her in her tracks. And so today we're not here to punish our minds, but we're here to love every aspect of our being, our confused self, our fearful self, our doubting self. All are embraced in the heart of oneness. This is the place of true freedom. And this Sunday, we are going to shift into freedom, a freedom that is already there, that just waits for us to return. Smile to this beautiful presence that you are. And when you're ready, open your eyes and join with me in this playground of the unmanifest. You know, we're doing a dance. We're doing a dance with this emptiness, with this oneness. And, oh, thank you, Seth, for being my steward of the bell. We love you guys. Dr. Ernest Holmes in The Science of Mind says, we are bound because we are first free. He says, the same mind that sets us free is the same mind that binds us. Now let those who have ears to hear, hear. My husband this morning asked me, he says, do you live in Nirvana? I said, with you? Hell no. I said, but you can offer me the most traumatic experience and I can go there with you, or I can choose to rest in that stillness. I can choose to rest in this spacious awareness that is my true nature and that I see everywhere revealed. Or I can choose to move into reaction, into concern, into judgment. It's always a choice. And Dr. Ernest Holmes says, we cannot live a choiceless life. Every moment we are choosing who you shall be in this moment. Even the Bible says, choose you this day who you will serve. Are you going to serve the one or are you going to serve the me? And so many of us have been in a culture that is very me-oriented. You know, how can I get my needs met? How can I get what I want? I have desires, I have needs, I have expectations. And that's the person that suffers in this world, because the me is always going to have that. So the shift, ironically, to shift into freedom is to shift out of me and to shift into the one that is what we all are, that beautiful, peaceful knowing. And it's really that not knowing that we're shifting into, because the mind wants to have answers. It wants to strategize. It wants to have conclusions. It wants to tell you this is what you're supposed to do to fix whatever it is. But that's not who you are. What you are and what I am is this awake awareness that arises within us, that is filled with curiosity and creativity and possibility. In fact, Dr. Ernest Holmes in The Science of Mind refers to God, this universal something, as the totality of possibilities. Wow. So could you open your relationship to the totality of possibilities? What would it look like? Not this concretized way I think it should look. You know, it's not going to be that way. Boy, then, if you're starting a new relationship and it's the totality of possibilities, could we meet in that vibration of the soul, where the soul wants to find meaning? There's this young lady who walks by my house. She has free ears with her two dogs, and they're getting older, but they're not as old as my old Bert. And they waddled up to the front steps and they wanted to play with him. And she told me, she said, you know, I've been an attorney my whole life and I'm sick of it. It's killing me. She says, I want to go back and get another degree and I want to be a vet assistant so I can help the animals. And I said, you know what? You don't need to get a qualification in order to help the animals. You can do it right now. And she looked at me quizzically because she's the kind of person that always gets a degree. No, you get a degree. If you want to do that, you have to get a degree. I said, no, you really don't. You don't even have to get a ministerial degree. Jody dropped out of the ministerial class because her ministry was an animal ministry and she was already doing it. She didn't need a certification. And then I hear Michael Beckwith in my head that says, God doesn't call the qualified. God qualifies the called. So if you have a calling to serve the animals, well, then you go out and you create a minister. You thought I'd given her a pass. All you have to do is give them permission. I gave a young lady once permission to leave a marriage that she said was killing her. The next day she did. And I said, is my voice that powerful? Apparently so. So I'm going to introduce her to Jody Rutenberg. And because her soul is on fire with some kind of service to the one, but her mind says in order to serve the one, you have to have a qualification. My prayer partner in Canada, they're exposed to these native peoples, and they're finding these graveyards in many schools where mass graves have been found in Canada. And it's exposing the wound, the pus pocket, if you will, in a very docile country, and they don't want to face it. It's like apartheid in South Africa. When I went to South Africa and was on Robben Island, I had this existential shame of being a white human being for what we did to the Africans way back when. But what happened was Nelson Mandela, who was there for 27 years, he didn't call it a prison, he called it the university. And when he was elected president of South Africa, he said, instead of getting revenge, he said, let's have reconciliation. Now, that's what they're trying to find in Canada. Can we find reconciliation in this country instead of sweeping it under the rug? And you know, in order to find freedom, we have to be able to meet the part of us that isn't free, the part of us that is bound, the part of us that is filled with judgment and fear, because it's going to arise. Everything that is bound and unfree is going to meet the part of us that is free. Now the question is, can we forgive? Can we make amends? And can we move on in a proactive, loving way? I'm going to be leaving for Maine tomorrow morning. My husband's sister and brother-in-law live up there, and they need someone to take care of their dog while they get on their tugboat and travel down the coast of Maine. So we agreed to stay with Sweeney up there in the house. And last time I was there was Christmas time, a year and a half ago, before the COVID, and my beloved old Bert, I thought he was going to die. He's got old dog syndrome. He had fallen over. So Jody Rutenberg came over and lay on the bed next to him. And she says, Bert, just stick around for my birthday. Her birthday's January 1st. This was like December 15th. And wouldn't you know it, he stayed and he thrived. And Al Underbrink stayed with him. And now Jody's going to be staying with him. He's still got old dog syndrome. And it's such a beautiful, sacred dance that we're doing with this dog. So when I went up to Maine last time in December, the first man I met, I'm walking Sweeney down by the ocean, and this man said, oh, you're from Alabama. I said, yeah. And he says, I just finished a museum in Montgomery, Alabama. I said, oh, you did? He said, yeah, it was the lynching museum. The lynching museum. And he said, it's important that our past be exposed and revealed for what it was in order for us to heal. So I had to go all the way to Maine to meet the man who created the museum in order for us to own our own inhumanity, if you will. And it's time to expose that in order to be free of it. You can't pretend that it didn't exist. We are a country that was founded on slavery. One of the questions in Canada they're asking the sweet Canadians is, do we have the qualifications to forgive our ancestors that perpetrated all this abuse? And they're sitting with this question, and Terry said, it's not about finding the answer, but maybe it's about sitting with the question. Can you be qualified to forgive? He said, I don't think the word qualified is appropriate here. Could we find some kind of reconciliation and amends for the past that we've experienced? Then we get to do this ruthless work on ourselves. You know, have I ever held anybody out of my heart? Have I ever judged another because they're different? And part of freedom is about facing the part of us that isn't free. I taught a class years ago. It was called Shift into Freedom by Locke Kelly. And he was a Buddhist. And it's a really profound book and class. But he talks in very pragmatic ways that we get caught up in the egoic mind that has judgments and opinions. And to shift into freedom, he says, simply unhook from that. You know, like you would take a shirt off a coat hanger. Take off, you don't have to think about that, you know. And then you find that spacious awareness. And then, he says, the local awareness, which is what you and I operate from normally, can be in service to this spacious awareness. So then he says, you operate from being, the ground of being, instead of the doer. Now, Jesus himself said, I of myself do nothing. It's the Father within that doeth the work. He was talking about that spacious, loving awareness. So could we be instruments of that, an instrument for truth, and speak the truth when ignorance is revealed from somebody and say, you know, that isn't really true? Could we speak the truth even if it really upsets them? You know, this really isn't about them. It's about you and your expectation. And you're suffering not because they did X, Y, and Z. You're suffering because you have an expectation that they should do A, B, and C. Now, that's the truth that will set them free and set you free from agreeing with something lesser than that. So years ago, we don't want to be free. We would rather be bound. We would rather, I have my opinions and I'm going to stick to them. You know, stomp my foot. I was coming home from church on the Gay Pride Day, and I was up at the corner of Whitesburg by the big Presbyterian church. And they said, let's celebrate Gay Pride Week. And they showed a building being exploded. And I went, oh, would I love to say a truth to that person? I just decided, enough, I'll just head home and touch my heart and say, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. People don't want to be free. They'd rather be in judgment. Years ago, Trey and I had a little parakeet. She was blue. Her name was Lucretia. She was the sweetest little thing, but she was in her cage all the time and she squawked. She wanted her freedom. But we didn't have a place to free her. So when Trey and I bought our first house, we were 30 years old in Atlanta, Georgia. It was this beautiful little house on a creek. And we had enough money. I think we paid $30,000. That's when houses were cheap. And we had a little deck built on the back that was exposed with a glass wall. And we put all our plants in there. And Lucretia finally had a space where she could fly. So the first thing we did, we took Lucretia's cage and we hung her in the solarium. And we opened the cage door, and there you go, Lucretia. You can fly to the trees. You have this whole space. She wouldn't leave her cage. She stood on the little doorway. She crawled on top of the cage, but she wasn't about to leave that cage. And then Shakespeare came into my mind. And so we'd rather bear those ills we have than fly to others we know not of. And thus conscience doth make cowards of us all. And thus the native resolution to be free is sicklied o'er by the pale cast of thought. If I leave my cage, what should happen to me? and enterprises of great pitch and motion, with this regard their currents turn awry and lose the name of action. She didn't take her freedom, even though we offered her her freedom, because she chose to stay in the security of her cage. Jody reminded me of a young lady who used to come here. In fact, she was raised in this center, and she married a beautiful Baptist man, and she was born a Jew. And when questioned about the religion, she basically said, I'm a Jew. She basically said, I'm not in the cage of something else. Now, what if we could have the courage to say the truth, even though the world may not accept it? You know, when I come out openly as a gay man, I'm sure that the homophobes in the community would leave, because I even had one of the board members say, we have expectations of you, David. And I said, well, that's why you're suffering, because I can't meet your expectations. I can only be what I am. And that was the truth. And of course, he left because he couldn't accept that maybe someone like me might be a spiritual being. I was told by my evangelical sister that I chose to be what I am. I said, did you choose to have blue eyes? You know, it's just kind of a crazy question. I said, it doesn't seem like that. Ralph Waldo Emerson was told he was a child of the devil. And he says, well, it doesn't seem to me that I'm a child of the devil, but if you need to call me the child of the devil, well, then you go right ahead. But in the meantime, I'm free of your opinions, because what other people think of me is none of my business. There was even a book written about that. So could we unhook from other people's judgment, from other people's opinions, and know that we can shift just by ringing a bell, just by saying the word enough? I'm not going there with you. When a family member wants to call and kvetch and kvetch, you say, thank you for sharing. You may be right. And then you hang up the call. Now that sets you free of engaging in what could be a really on and on and on. This is the way it's supposed to be. No, that's the way it is for you. I had someone in this teaching say, we are the best spiritual teaching on the planet. And then I had a smart person like Tia say, well, actually, it's the best teaching for you. But for me, it's not the best teaching. Oh, that maybe got some umbrage. But could we speak the truth to power and let the chips fall where they may? Let me give you a taste of Locke Kelly. I love this guy. He said, the key is to go beyond the idea that we're the doer. He said, like a baton being passed down between relay racers, the baton that we're passing is our local awareness. And the ego, identified doer, collapses like an exhaust runner. The baton is in the capable hands of spacious awareness, which can now focus using local awareness. And awake awareness embodied, we can begin to know and do everything that we do from this being with a capital B. Again, I of myself do nothing. It's this spacious awareness, the Father within, the divine love, the peace that passes all understanding, the joie de vivre, the joy of life. It does everything. David is an instrument for that. Mother Teresa, I'm merely a hand. I'm merely a pencil in the hand of God. She understood that it was this divine love that was doing everything through her. So that's where the freedom arises. Local awareness is discovered. Oh God, there's a me. And there is now a new option of living from the unity of the two worlds that have always been together. When local awareness unhooks from thinking and the ego functioning, well, then local awareness has intelligence and intention inherent within it. Thinking then is returned to its natural function as the sixth sense. Thinking as the sixth sense. That's what the mind is here to do. It's programmed to think, but you're not your thoughts. So could we be aware of the thinker that thinks the thoughts? And then you can ask this lovely question, mind of mine, where are you going? Now, you know, the mind is kind of like a dog. If you throw it a really stinky bone, the mind will chase it. But if you say to the mind, do I want to follow that stinky bone? At this stage of the game, I have dominion over my thoughts. So he goes on to say, it is the sixth sense. It's no longer the primary way of our knowing. And this means that the doer from the everyday mind is no longer the actor initiating the choice. I'm not the one doing it. When I was a brand new minister, a well-meaning person handed me the library of all the world's religions. I mean, I had the Dharmapada there. I had the Upanishads. I mean, it was legion. And I'm supposed to read all these and then integrate it and present it to y'all. And I don't know why I went in that direction. Where was I going with that? Initiating a choice that the everyday man, or that you're not the doer. Oh, and one of the books was the Bhagavad Gita, which is the Bible of Hinduism. And in the Bhagavad Gita, there are two simple principles. One is that you are not the doer. And the second is to have no attachment to the outcome of your labor. Now, you can take those two simple, seminal ideas. You're not the doer. Well, who's the doer then? This divine something, this creative something is the doer. And I am the instrument for that. You know, I came into ministry by being a dancer, by being an actor. And I learned when I was a brand new student of acting, studying Stanislavski, that the great actors are the ones who can embody the character. It's not David performing Huckleberry Finn, but I literally embody Huckleberry Finn. Now, I was this innocent little 18-year-old as Huck Finn, and I had to learn to smoke corn cob pipe. I had never placed anything of tobacco in my mouth. And so I nearly got sick, but I learned to 29 performances of Huck Finn, and by then I was hooked on smoking corn cob pipes. You see, the sins of the parents are visited on the... I was a great Huck Finn. So he goes on to say this. Local awareness has to find spacious awareness. And then it gets to know the feeling of seeing and being from that spacious awareness. This was my little Rumi calendar the other day. This is for you, Jody Rutenberg. Rumi says, when I run after what I think I want, my days are a furnace of stress and anxiety. But if I sit in my own place of patience, what I need flows true to me effortlessly and without pain. In other words, don't go running after what you want. That's the little me person. And if you sit long enough by a stream, as Jody did in Canada, maybe a grizzly bear will come up and say, well, hi there, sweetie, what you up to? You know? She's not afraid of the grizzlies. When the local awareness discovers spacious awareness, its job is not done, however. Local awareness takes over the job previously done by our intention and our attention. In this teaching, they say the most valuable thing you possess is your attention. So what are you putting your attention on? Are you putting your attention on the good? Like Nancy, are you putting your attention on gratitude? Or are you putting your attention on the problem? Because if you put your attention on the problem all the time, you're bound. Remember, you're bound because first you're free. If you're always focusing on problems and what's wrong with the other person, well, then you're actually creating that in life. So could we put our attention on the part of us that is free? Could we put our attention on the peace? Put our attention on truth instead of our opinions and conclusions. And then the beautiful thing called intention. Wayne Dyer wrote a book called The Power of Intention. Last Wednesday in our satsang, we had a beautiful journey with Glory G. And at the end, we stood in a circle and I invited them to place a seed of intention. Because everything is a metaphor. When you plant a seed, if you plant a carrot seed, don't expect a turnip. You plant a carrot seed, you're going to get a carrot. So if you plant peace, you probably won't get anger. But if you plant anger, you're probably going to manifest anger. So that's where intention is. It's like a planting a seed. So we ran around the circle and each one planted a seed of intention. And a friend of mine said, I planted the seed of intention of peace. And he says, everything unlike peace seems to have erupted in my life. And so I texted him back. I says, keep breathing in that seed of peace, because that's what happens. When you say, I'm going to live from peace, everything unlike it is going to surface, and you get to meet it, not with judgment and with anger, but in a way, like Rumi said, with gratitude. This too is here for me. So yes, this is Locke Kelly saying at the very end, maintain this open-hearted awareness. And lastly, he says, imagine local awareness as a wave that arises from the ocean of spacious awareness. Don't you love metaphor? Your local awareness, your local mind, is coming from this spacious place of knowing. Lastly, he says, yet it never really stops being the ocean, the wave. The ocean is its essence. There's wonderful videos. You can see Locke Kelly on YouTube. He's got a whole series of meditations on how to shift into freedom. And I remember watching one of them, and he said, you know, I used to think that my job was to be like a cloud, a white, fluffy cloud, and I'm here to not be a stormy cloud, a turbulent cloud, but to just keep my whole act together. And then one day he said, holy cow, I'm not the cloud, I'm the sky. I'm the very sky. What if you are all little clouds? Yes, the waves, but really what you are is the ocean of love. What you really are is the context of spirit having a human experience. It changes the way you see things. And when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. When you can see it as the native people, the ones that we persecuted, they realize that these are all my relations. You know, they would, St. Francis awoke to brother, sun, sister, moon, that they're all a part of me. Could we have that evolved realization that we're not separate from anything? And that's not something you get from a book. That's something you get from life. You get from holding a rock and realizing that you and the rock aren't separate. I gave Jody this lovely little book by one of my teachers, Llewellyn Von Lee. It's called Spiritual Ecology. And the very last little chapter, he talks about finding meaning in life. And he says it's the soul that finds meaning in life. Our ego wants answers, wants conclusions, wants, you know, dreams to be fulfilled. But the soul wants to find meaning, like that woman who was an attorney, who wants to find meaning at this stage of her life by serving and helping others. And when we give ourselves to that meaning, Llewellyn says, we begin to find the sacred in everything. And he concludes in this beautiful, humble little book, until we see life as sacred, we're going to see it as a commodity that we can exploit. We see our nature as a commodity to exploit, instead of the sacredness of the rocks and the sacredness of the trees and the sacredness of the critters that inhabit this country. Someone asked me if I'm going to eat a lobster when I go to Maine, and every time I would go to Maine, they would get the lobsters, and they would stick them in the water, and I'd hear them scream. And then they'd put that beautiful animal in front of me, and I'm told that I'm here to rip it apart, rip its claws apart, rip its face. And I have to be a grateful. Trey says, you will receive this with gratitude, and you will not be the wuss that you are. And so I say, thank you for giving me the lobster. It's, honey, would you break a little piece for me, and I'll have a little taste. That's as far as I could go with it. And so could we have compassion for the part of ourselves that is evolving out of the way? When I was a brand new minister here in Huntsville, I was invited to one of the church people's home, the very first dinner I had, and they had prime rib, and I was a vegetarian at the time. And Trey said, you will eat that and you will not say a word, because he was so concerned what others would think. Again, it was a learning moment, a moment where I learned to say no. And from then on, I haven't accepted any church invitation for dinner. You might have noticed. At the very end of the book, this is how he concludes. He says, when we shift out of our ego identification, then we feel free from perpetual dissatisfactions and perpetual separation. He says, the absence of the mini-me, well, that's me, I got my preferences and I got my demands and my needs. When you get past the mini-me that wails and suffers, then it leads to a place of relief. You're no longer tormented by your mind. It leads to a place of relaxation. I can breathe again. My brother's got his house intact. I'll find peace of mind. You can tell you're getting there when you're at peace, amidst when the world is screaming. You find a sense of freedom from striving. There's no longer an ambition. People keep saying, when are you going to write that book? When are you going to write that book? And I said, you know, I've really lost all ambition to do any of that kind of stuff. I said, you want a book? I said, listen to my talks, transcribe them, get someone to edit them. There you've got your book. But for me, I'm not striving anymore. Somewhere along the way, I stopped being the seeker. We must discover the presence of the ground of being and then learn how to operate from there. Wow. That's why I go around singing, be still and know that I am God. Could you find that ground of being and just hang out there? Sit in the garden and watch the lightning bugs? I came back from Satsang Wednesday night, Glory G, and I took old Bird out. You know, he's ancient and he's so grateful. And he goes down the steps and we're walking in the backyard, and the sunset had come down when I was driving home around 8. Beautiful colors. I get home, I take old Bird out, and I'm surrounded by lightning bugs. I mean, they're everywhere. And I'm in this state of awe as I'm waddling down the alleyway with a flashlight so he can see to do his business. And then when I come back in the house, I hear a truck going down the street. And they're spraying that chemical. And I'm thinking, all my lightning bugs. I know they mean well. I know it's for mosquitoes. And I'm trying to logically tell myself that it isn't going to hurt all my lightning bugs. But in the same sort of sense, I'm thinking, oh, Jesus Christ, do they have to do that? We must discover the presence of ground of being and learn and find those qualities. And he said, the most important of these is this new knowing that doesn't return to the everyday mind for a second opinion. We don't go asking people, what should I do? Rather, what happens now, there is a new not knowing that knows. A new not knowing that knows. You just know. You just know that you can't eat that lobster, and you just know that that stuff isn't good for the lightning bugs, and you just know that we have to be kind to one another. Imagine no religion. I wonder if you can. His Holiness the Dalai Lama says, my religion is kindness. Could we tell that to the evangelicals over here that are condemning people like me because I'm gay? Could we just practice a religion of kindness? Could we get so simple that not knowing, a new not knowing that knows, has to be developed for us to stabilize our functional awakening. And when we become familiar with this new awareness-based operating system, well, then we can begin to live from being. We're literally creating a different operating system within our being. It's not me with my judgments and my preferences and my expectations. Get rid of all expectations. They're the ground of suffering. You got a date, don't have any expectations. Get rid of all your attachments. The attachments create suffering. That means you can still possess, and I'm attached to all of you. God knows I'm attached to Tia, but I'm not attached to how she is in this world. And so I'm attached to my puppies and my kids and my beloved ones, my beautiful home. But I'm not so attached that I couldn't give it to Jody in a heartbeat. I mean, she's the mother of my children. I'm going up to Maine, and I know they're going to be perfectly happy, or at least content, because they know they're surrounded by love. So, the key. When we're seeing from this open-hearted awareness, we find thoughts, feelings, and sensations, both pleasant and unpleasant, they will still arise, but they're arising with an embodied awareness. And there's no separate self to attach to them or to feel threatened by them. So anger will come up and you'll say, oh, there you are, my little anger, and I love you. An expectation will come up, and we do have expectations. Oh, there you are, my little expectation, and I love you. And rage will come up. Boy, I have rage sometimes when I thought of what they did to those native children in Canada. And it comes up and I say, there you are, my rage, and I love you too. And there's a thing called righteous rage because it's the way we turn the corner. You know, there was a man that was buying up Five Points where I live, and the first thing he would do, and he came over and complimented Trey and me and our beautiful yard. And then he says, I'm going to try to raise the rents so we get good people in the neighborhood and get rid of the riffraff. And I kind of like the riffraff. But the first thing he did was he started cutting down all the trees because he said they're inconvenience. And, you know, I have an attachment to trees because they breathe and they give me oxygen. And so my sweet husband was outraged. And we're trying to be good neighbors, to be peaceful, and they're buying up several of the houses all around us. So finally he took courage to speak the truth. And he says, excuse me, sir, but he says, we're trying to sustain the historic trees in our neighborhood. And he said to Trey, oh, get a life, would you? Ooh. And so he left, but he did speak his truth. And then Trey's given money to the city and they're planting trees. So you act proactively, but you're still going to have rage. You're still going to have reactant, but you're bringing it into a different order of expression, hopefully, and not rage. Very last bit of Locke Kelly. He says, once you establish this new way of being, you have three different things that happen. Recognition, realization, and stabilization, and ultimately expression. You recognize when you're operating from the egoic, reactive self, and you also recognize when you're coming from that loving, peaceful, awake place. The realization is, you are that. You are not a victim. Remember, you're bound because first you were free. I am not going to choose that bound consciousness to be my operator. I'm going to realize that in a breath, a ringing of a bell, I can step into love. And then the last thing is, it's stabilized. We want to be stable in that peace. We want to be stable in spacious awareness. We don't want to just use it on rare occasions when we need to find it during a crisis moment. And you know, in the crisis moments, usually those are the easiest to find the stabilization because it's too painful to be out there in reaction. So my beloved Marie is going through some physical challenges. She gets to stabilize herself in this beautiful awareness that she's going to face whatever life brings her, and she's going to smile at it. And then, ultimately, from stabilization to expression. To expression. And then he talks about, very sweetly, he says, we all have a default mechanism. You know, when life goes out of control, where's your default? Are you going to move back into control? I'm going to fix this problem? Or is your default mechanism, I'm going to surrender and breathe. Ring a bell. I'm going to stop. I'm going to step back. I'm going to observe what is. You know, and that's the invitation. To find that default place in ourselves. I'm going to be doing a new class in August. People are asking me, and I finally came to a conclusion what it's going to be. I'm going to resurrect an old class, one of my favorites, called Falling into Grace by Ajahn Chah. And grace is that default place for him. And he says grace is always there. Grace is the unmerited givingness of the universe to all of its creations. Amazing grace. You've heard it sung many times. Could we know that it's right there? And so when life seems chaotic and we're fragmented and we're in a kind of, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Could we exhale, ring the bell, move from here into here, and surrender into this grace-filled place? It's just waiting for you. The grace that passes all. Let me just give you a tiny taste of this, and I'll move into our closing meditation. I'm loving this book. He says, grace is all around us. It's your default mechanism. And if we only have the eyes to see it, the good moments are grace. The difficult moments are grace. The confusing moments are grace. There is grace in every situation, grace in every person that we meet, no matter how easy or difficult we perceive them to be. Our hearts will flower and will be able to express the peace and the love that each of us has within us. We let go into this grace. It's not something we have to earn. Remember, it's unmerited givingness of the universe. That means you don't have to be a good person to get grace. You just have to open to it and surrender to it and allow it. Fall into it, he says. We fall into grace. It's something we fall into, like when we fall into the arms of another, or we put our head on the pillow and we go to sleep. Whatever might be there in our experience, it occurs within this vast spaciousness of peace and stillness and ultimate well-being, and we know that we are loved. My beloved Terry daughter, she was driving to church today and she saw a man waving the American flag and he had a sign running all over. And she thought, oh God, it's one of those signs again. I know what it's probably going to say. But instead the sign said, know how much you are loved and know how much you make a difference on this planet. And in a holy instant, she shifted out of a reactive nature into a, oh my God, not everything is hell. There is a moment of grace where we're reminded that we are loved. So could we shift into that love right now? So I'm going to take you back into this heart space. And imagine the bell ringing. Dong. Dong. One more. Dong. It's the trinity of being. And as the bell rings, our attention returns to that spacious, open-hearted awareness at the core of our being. And observe that awake awareness within you, how it really doesn't think thoughts, how it's pure awareness itself. And you're breathing in and you're breathing out from that awareness. It doesn't have opinions. Now your ego has opinions. And when the opinions should arise, you smile at those opinions. Thank you for sharing. And we allow our attention to return to that spacious awareness. Ralph Waldo Emerson says, it's only the finite self that wails and suffers. But this infinite presence at the core of our being lies stretched in smiling repose. So I love to imagine that there is this part of me that is the smile of the universe that says, this too is good, this too is God. And by opening to it, I see the blessing in everything. I see the blessing in the problem because it took me to a realization of what doesn't have a problem. I bless the darkness because it awakened the light within me. I bless the confusion because the confusion, ultimately, when it's embraced and seen for what it is, underneath it is clarity. I find that this not knowing place within my heart actually knows. It knows how to be kind. It knows how to be awake and creative. And so we abide in this spaciousness. We've shifted out of our local mind, and now we are resting in this spacious field of awareness. Rumi says, out beyond the ideas of right thinking and wrong thinking, there is a field. And when the soul lies down in that field, words are not necessary. Even the idea, each other, does not exist. And then he says, I will meet you there. And so we're meeting in that field of spacious awareness, where love abides, where creativity is born, where possibilities exist. And it loves us so much that it chose to take up residence within all creation. It is our job to go home, to a place that is already there, waiting for us. And know that by coming here on Sunday morning and sitting in this sacred space with our collective energy coherent in an intention to be that, to be still and know that we are that, that we potentiate that here on planet Earth. When two or more are gathered, Jesus said, in my nature, my name, I am there. So the I am is there when we come together, not as a me, but as a we. We being the divine presence as the ocean of being in the wave of our existence. So we are the ocean of love, splashing up on the shore of life. We are the spacious, awake awareness, moving through our thoughts. And the thoughts become divine thoughts, inspired thoughts, empowering thoughts. The feelings become feelings of compassion and acceptance and joy, all arising not out of our creation, but through a co-creative process with the universe. We have returned home, and we find that the divine presence is there waiting for us, stretched in smiling repose. So find the smile of your soul, your eternal soul, remembering you're not a body with a soul, but you're an eternal soul that has a body. So we prioritize it. And from the soul of the one, the oversoul of the universe, I invite you to join in the heart salutation by saying to this divine aspect within and all around, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the deepest aspect of my soul. The beloved presence in me bows to the beloved presence in you.
The beloved presence in me bows to the beloved presence in you.
In this spacious awareness, we are one.
In this spacious awareness, we are one.
And our local mind,
and our local mind
is in service to this expanded awareness.
And I am free.
To be all that I am.
To be all that I am.
In spirit and in truth.
So
open your eyes, open your hands, open your hearts, wiggle your fingers, and let your light shine. Thank you. Happy 4th of July. Be the freedom that you are.
For listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.